You ready to go?
I guess.
Fair enough. What's up? This is Movies On Up. His time has come. His time is all the time. That's my co-host, Mr. Dave Bisella.
24/7.
365.
That's my nickname.
Because he's always open, 24/7. That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. His time has come is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, and spoiler alert, it will be discussed today on this episode. Once you figure that out, send your guess to us via Twitter, at Movies On Up. You can put it on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com, if you are correct. And if we choose you, this will probably be the first prize package we send out this year, I think.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. I'm guessing this is the first episode of the year. It's not the first one we've recorded this year.
Yeah. If this is up in the next day or two after we record it, it's the first of the year. So that's all on you.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. Just because I really don't want to edit the last one, I think that's going to be a little difficult. This one is not a difficult episode for us to do. It's, I guess, 52 weeks in the making. It is our favorites of 2017, where we literally go through everything we saw and give our top 10. It's not a collective top 10. Dave's got 10 movies. I've got 10 movies. I suspect there's going to be a fair amount of variance between the movies this year, and I think that is probably apropos of 2017, a year of movies that were maybe more misses than hits, or not as big a hits as they could have, would have, should have been. It just seems like last year there was a ton of stuff that we could see ahead of time and know this is going to be great, this is going to make a ton of money. This year, I think we were always waiting for the movie that was going to do that.
From that standpoint, I mean, it was the lowest earning year in a long, long time. But I think quality of movies, it was a really good year. Usually I can get the top 10 and then maybe I could fill out a 15 if we were going that far. And then I just have a bunch of stuff that I just liked. I go 20 deep and, you know, just looking at my 16 through 20, because I did go through just in case I move stuff around.
I could go 22.
Really good. I mean, I have a couple in there that I think are probably in your top 10.
Probably.
And even after I go past that 20, there's some really good movies there. Like, yeah, they're not maybe top 10, top 15 worthy, but they're really good. And I think I win a total of 30 movies, and I jot down throughout the year. If I see something I enjoy, I just jot it down, and then I put it together in a list.
Some of it, I think, in between our two lists, it's going to become apparent. Netflix had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
Bright's not on either of our lists. But that's a movie, I think, if it got wide released, it would have made some money.
It would have done decent, yeah.
Yeah, just because of the star power and, I guess, the accessibility of the movie. A lot of times Netflix movies are genre, niche movies.
This was every genre ever.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it was kind of all things to all people, and I think it would have made a decent amount of money. But some of the best Netflix stuff this year probably wouldn't have contributed a ton at the box office, but
in my 30, I have like 6 Netflix movies. And I mean, there was more than that yeah. I thought. Now, that's not including Bright,
right,
or like the Brad Pitt one. Like,
War Machine.
Yeah. Like
that, which made my top 10 in the halftime report.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. I don't fully remember because that was six
so
months
long
ago. Yeah, exactly. What the hell? But I know that there are movies that were in the halftime report that managed to still make it in my top 10 of the year. And I think that happened more times this year than I think had ever happened in the past.
I think so. It was a top heavy. Like, I mean, it was a solid year all around, but it was pretty top heavy, I think.
In my opinion, yes. So some of these movies we've already talked about this year, we're going to talk about them again. I may be surprised that they're still where they're at, but you know, there was good stuff, but I think the great stuff just came out early, which is really odd.
Yeah.
But Dave, when did your number 10 come out?
2017.
Could have saw that one coming.
The summer, I think it was. I don't have the... Maybe September? I don't know.
Maybe
it was Kingsman 2. Yes. Kingsman, The Golden Circle by Matthew Vaughn, starring Taron Egerton, Mark Strong, Colin Firth.
Elton John.
Channing Tatum. And
the dude.
Pascal.
Oh.
Pedro Pascal. And Julianne Moore, of course.
Sure.
I love the first Kingsman. And the first Kingsman I had no expectations for because I wasn't too nuts on the book. Right. I didn't really – I was like, oh, maybe Matthew Vaughn is missed. This is the first thing – first misfire movie he makes that I don't love. Loved it. This one doesn't have to take the whole first half of the movie setting it up.
Right.
It gets right to it. And it's ridiculous. The action in this, it was so ridiculous in the first one, but they upped it in this one and it got ridiculous. It's hard to top Samuel L. Jackson's Valentine as the villain.
Yeah.
But Julianne Moore does her damnedest as Poppy. It's just this ridiculous, over-the-top, insane villain that I thought was great. Channing Tatum, criminally underused, but hopefully he'll be used.
I mean, that was false advertising right there.
Yeah. I mean, good for what he was. Hopefully he'll be in the third one if we get a third one. Pedro Pascal came in and I thought brought a lot of new stuff to it. They made the Colin Firth coming back okay. It was very comic booky, but whatever. I thought it was really good. I like that the princess from the...
Yeah, she's still around.
She's still around. I liked a lot about it. It was ridiculous. I really like Taron Egerton.
Yeah.
I think he's really, really good. And he had a different go of it this time because in Kingsman, he had to be this dude you don't like that you grow to like. In this one, he's James Bond, essentially. And
it's not an origin story for Eggsy anymore.
Yeah, no, and it's so good. It's so ridiculous. It's so silly. It's so stupid, and I loved every second of it.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only thing this movie really missed for me was that henchman, that Sofia Boutella-level henchman. The dogs didn't quite do it for me, but it was cool. It was a good movie I liked a lot. My number 10 features a Star Wars character. Or an actor that portrays a Star Wars character. It's not actually Finn in the movie. It is John Boyega alongside Will Poulter and Algie Smith in Catherine Bigelow's Detroit. Unintentionally, my list is going to start off in some really shitty places. Not that Detroit is a shitty place. I've never been there.
It is.
8 Milers, direct all your hate mail to Dave. I've never been to Detroit, but I know that this movie is in a really bad place as far as the subject matter. And once we get to the Algiers Hotel, Bigelow does not let up the intensity. It starts very early in the movie, and it just continues. Poulter, Jack Rayner, and the rest of the cops in the movie are really, really amazing. You kind of have two separate casts going on. You have the law, and then you have the terrorized hotel guests, which are led by Smith. And an understated Anthony Mackie. Poulter is such a wonderful villain in this movie. You can't help but hate him. And the closer we get to the end of the movie, he actually made me sick to look at him. It's kind of a difficult movie to make in terms of, I think Bigelow was as fair to the situation as possible. Since there's really no quote-unquote definitive version of the events, she's got a divisive subject that she does show some fault on each side, certainly more on one side than the other, and that's pretty apropos, but I think that can be difficult to do in a movie like this where, okay, I want to make a movie about some racist cops that do some real racist cop stuff, and they're disgusting people. Yes, but you're also showing, all right, well, those racist cops didn't just materialize at this hotel for no given reason. I mean, it is super, super intense. And John Boyega was kind of our, as the viewer, our guy in the movie.
He's the in-between.
Yeah.
He can see both sides.
Well, right, because he's wearing a badge. He's just a rent-a-cop. He's wearing a badge like the police, but he's also, you know, the same skin color as most of the guys that are getting harassed. But not a fun movie by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought it was one of the best made movies of the year.
Bigelow's are usually
for sure. That's not a surprise.
I like Will Poulter, and I like where his career has gone, because I remember when the one that did True Detective season one, when he was attached to It, and he cast as Pennywise, and it was Will Poulter, and it's like, really? Like the kid from Son of
We're
Rambo,
the Millers.
And then We're the Millers.
Yeah.
But then you see him in something like this, and it's like, there's evil.
Do it.
There's evil in that kid, and you know, Bill Sarsgaard was really, really good, but it's like, I want that. I want that Will Poulter, Pennywise. But it was good. I liked him. I didn't like him. I liked this movie.
Sure.
I liked this movie. I thought he was really, really good. Yeah. It was one of those, like, really good performances. My number nine, speaking of good performances, from a writer who has had an awesome past couple of years, actually stepped behind the camera this year, Taylor Sheridan, wrote and directed Wind River from this year, starring Jeremy Renner, Elizabeth Olsen. I really like this movie. I thought Sicario, I thought, was fantastic a few years ago. It was one of my favorite movies of whatever 2 years ago was. And then Hell or High Water got him Oscar noms, and I thought it was good. I like this more than Hell or High Water.
Right.
And I liked Hell or High Water. I thought Renner is really, really good in this. This is leading man Renner. This is movie star Renner. And I feel like he's a hard one to get right. Like, I don't see him as your Jason Bourne, like, franchise leader. But this...
He could have done that.
He did.
His Bourne movie was good.
Yeah, he was good. But it's like, this is the Renner. I will watch these kind of Renner movies all day long. Elizabeth Olsen, I thought, was really, really good. John Bernthal shows up briefly, but so good. Like, Bernthal, he was in Sweet Virginia this year also, which is, would have made my top 20, but he just brings this intensity. And he's only got 5 minutes of screen time, but it's so powerful and so good. I want to see more. I want to see more stuff Sheridan writes. I want to see more stuff he directs, because I thought this was done really well. It's a slow-paced murder mystery. It's what I wanted The Snowman to be, pretty much. It's what I wanted that to be, but that was not. It was just a really well done murder mystery with really great characters. And the relationship between Renner and the community, I thought, was really, really good. And with the dad of the victim, spelled out over time without just throwing everything all out at once. I thought it was really, really good.
What I liked about this one is when we talk about prisoners and how, like, it was obvious that there was something in Detective Loki's past that made him so interested in this case. There was obviously that with Jeremy Renner's character here, but they tell you what it is. It takes time to develop fully.
And you know, until the very, very end, you realize, yes.
And then you understand why he's willing to go to the lengths he is. So that was a good payoff there, where it was built up, but not a payoff in Prisoners. There's the Sicario connection, the writer of that, the director of that with Prisoners. My number nine is another bummer as well. It is another movie about racism. It is Dee Rees' Mudbound, Netflix jam, the first one to make the list this year, starring Garrett Hedlund, Jason Clarke, Rob Morgan, Mary J. Blige. This movie is full of great performances. Mary J. Blige is getting most of the buzz, but I think Jason Mitchell and Hedlund were fantastic in this movie. John Bank is spot on as the racist patriarch of the family. Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
And Gremlins.
He did not play Mike Ehrmantraut in Gremlins, that I'm aware of, although that would be great if those movies took place in the same cinematic universe. Yeah, I don't see how that works, but nonetheless, I guess given the climate of the past couple of years, it's not surprising that we'd have a lot of stories about racism or inequality told in any given year. This is a really difficult watch just because of how, I mean, the events in Detroit are not good at all, but I think viscerally I was more affected by what happens in Mudbound. I mean, it's a story about two characters, Garrett Hedlund and Jason Mitchell, both come back from fighting World War II. Garrett Hedlund, being a white guy, is treated very well. He was a fighter pilot. And then to see the exact opposite in Jason Mitchell's character, who is like an infantryman, and he was treated better in Germany than he is when he comes back to his home in Alabama. Like I said, it's a tough watch, but those two, their chemistry, I thought, was really, really good together. A lot of great performances, even smaller. Carey Mulligan's really good in the movie.
Anything she's in.
Right. Jason Clarke's...
He's another one.
He's amazing, but it's not his movie. I like what Mary J. Blige did. I'm glad that some people are getting some pub for this movie, but it really, to me, I couldn't single out any one given actor and say this is the person that should get an award, but I thought it was one of the best acted movies I've seen, if not the best.
It's really, really good. Dee Rees did a really, really good job, and not getting a Golden Globe nom is a shame. chances are there's no Oscar nom, which is a shame. It's a really, really, really solid movie. My number 8, also a Netflix original movie, came out in August, directed by Adam Wingard, who we're big fans of. Not everybody was a big fan of Death Note, though. And I get it, I guess. I enjoy the anime enough. The manga that I've read is okay, but I don't have this super close connection to it. Even if I do, I'm pretty good at distancing myself from it. I thought what Wingard did was made a really fun kind of story out of a not fun story. Light Turner gets this book and he can write people's names in them and how they die, and it happens. Nat Wolff is fine. He's good. I thought Margaret Qualley from The Leftovers and from Andy McDowell was really, really good as the love interest. Yeah, slash spoiler. Like, yeah. I thought she was really, really good. But then, like, somebody like Lakeith Stanfield dominated the screen as Elle. Elle's this really, really good character already. And then you take somebody like Lakeith Stanfield, who just elevates that. And he had the quirks. And he had this, there's something about Elle that Lakeith Stanfield was so good. Lakeith Stanfield has this, I don't know what to call it. It's not this, it's intensity in a way, but not in the same, like everything he's in, he just has this charisma, this intense charisma that's unique. And
you watch him.
Yeah,
there's
you can't. He's hard to take.
There's some bullshit word, but you know, yeah, it's talent.
Yeah, it's insane, and I just want to see him in more and more movies. Dream movie, if you're listening, Matt Reeves, write the Riddler into Batman and cast Lakeith Stanfield, because that I think is a match made in heaven. But you know, I get the criticisms of this movie. This is one of those this year's where there's a lot of movies that people criticize, and especially like fanboys like want to take a dump on. Power Rangers, I thought was really, really good. For what it could have been and what it came out, thought it was good. If we did 11, Power Rangers would have been right there. I really like Power
Rangers. Just lurking.
But I really like Power Rangers. I really like Death Note. I thought Ryuk visually was done good. And I thought making him more in the background was a good thing. They didn't overdo it. They didn't overexpose him. And Defoe's voice acting was just perfect. And it led up to the ending is awesome. I love the very, very ending of it. I just think it's like a 90-minute movie. I think it's a fun watch for that 90 minutes. Like, I've watched it a few times. It's not an uplifting story. For something about it is really fun, and it's visually cool.
Yes, that's the thing that I don't think you can argue. I don't have any affinity or any connection to the source material, so I don't care. I'm not going to watch the anime. I'm not going to read the manga. But I watched the movie, and visually it was cool. I could take it or leave it, but if it's on in the background, hey, that's great. Because, yeah, there were the Ferris wheel at the end. Those are really cool shots. The first death from the book is really cool to watch. It was really quite a visual movie, as is my number 8. It's Dunkirk from Christopher Nolan, starring Fionn Whitehead, Mark Rylance, and Tom Hardy. At this point, I would be fascinated to watch Nolan make an A to B movie, just to see if he remembers how to do it. There are some time hops in this movie that allow us to see certain events from multiple perspectives, mainly from the air, the sea, and the ground, some of which work better than others. But even paying attention, I found myself confused a time or two, like, wait a minute, why is Cillian Murphy there? Because I just saw him here in another scene, and he's wet then, he's not now. Did this happen before? Why is it at nighttime? I don't understand what's happening, but that's Christopher Nolan for you. What he does manage to do well, might I add, is weave the stories of our three groups of characters into a narrative that can be followed easy enough. He didn't make a war movie, and he said he wasn't setting out to make a war movie, but he managed to get the scale of a war movie into what was basically a story about a rescue operation, just this desperate act to evacuate this plucky band of resistance fighters that would go on to be the spark that lights the fire that would surely burn the Axis powers.
Nolan's one of those. I feel like
he Christopher Nolan'd this movie, and he didn't have to.
And Wes Anderson Paul Thomas Anderson, Tarantino even to an extent. Those are directors that I used to really like, but then they almost became bigger than their movies to where they have to put such a stamp on their movie that you know. And I get that to an extent. But
if Kathryn Bigelow makes this movie, I would have no criticisms of it.
Pretty much. Yeah, so I don't know. My number seven, this director really Nacho Vigalondo'd this movie up. This was written and directed by Nacho Vigalondo, starring Anne Hathaway, Jason Sudeikis, Tim Blake Nelson, Dan Stevens shows up there for a bit. It's colossal. I really, really love this movie. And I thought the trailers set it up nice because
I don't think I ever saw a trailer, to be honest with you.
It was real brief, and it gives you the sense that, oh, there's this giant monster attacking Japan.
Or Korea.
Korea, wherever. Somewhere yeah, whatever. Over there. Thailand? I don't know.
In the Caribbean.
They're tropical. Yeah. And, it's linked to Anne Hathaway somewhere in New Jersey. That's pretty much all you need to know going into the movie. You don't even need to know that. I told Erin nothing about this when we watched it. And I think it was a fun ride for her. Like, I think I told you too much. If you didn't know anything about it, Colossal, I think it's on Amazon Prime now or something. So if you haven't seen it, watch it. It's really, really good, but it turns in, it could go a million different ways. It's a really good story about alcoholism and getting your life together and
monsters fighting robots.
And monsters fighting robots. And it's really, really good. I really like Anne Hathaway in it.
Suds is fantastic.
Sudeikis is great.
Yes, because that is a great role for him.
Because he's very sudsy.
Yep.
Until he's not.
Yep.
And then it's like, oh, that's
shit.
That's new Suds. I've never seen that Suds. And Anne Hathaway, I thought, is really, really good because she's not this like lovable princess like she is in so many of her other movies. She's very, very flawed and very hard to like, but she brings this charisma to it that's she's really likable. And it's such a unique, odd, interesting story. It's just super cool. I thought the visuals were, for what they were for this type of movie, I thought they were good. If you like movies about alcoholism and monsters.
If you like movies about chronic illness, you may like my number seven. And it is Michael Showalter's The Big Sick, starring Kumail Nanjiani, Zoe Kazan, Holly Hunter, Ray Romano. I kind of enjoy when a rom-com doesn't find itself particularly light on one side of that equation. And I'm not sure that I was ever worried about that with the script coming from Kumail and Emily Gordon. I was really surprised over how much I did really like this movie. I had expected to like it. I had heard a lot of buzz about it, but usually that sets a movie up for failure in my head because there's no way it can possibly, oh, you mean this is actually a good romantic comedy? I will reserve my judgment, thank you very much. And I did, but I guess this movie was always set up to sort of win me over. I like Kumail. I really like Zoe Kazan. I think she's fantastic in these kind of movies, offbeat romantic comedies, as sort of the offbeat love interest. I've gone on and on about her before, and I think she's really good, as usual, in this movie. And I think the scenes of her and Kumail kind of back and forth about how they're not going to see each other, I really liked those scenes. But I think what makes this movie really great for me was Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. The tension that in their relationship is a fantastic B story, and I would watch that movie by itself. But to put that up against what Kumail was doing, I thought was really good movie making. And it was also, I think, smart on his part to surround himself with seasoned actors that could help take some of the emotional burden off him. Because, spoiler alert, Zoe Kazan gets sick in the movie and she spends most of the movie in a coma. So it's him. And he's not been in a ton of stuff. So if he had to do all the heavy lifting, the movie could have suffered. But having Ray Romano, a comic but who's got a ton of acting experience, and Holly Hunter, who's great, I think that really provided a safety net for him, and their scenes together, I love as well.
Yeah, this was my number seven as well.
Was it actually? Or?
It is. It actually is. I was looking it up when you said it. And sometimes there are actors or people that you feel like they're yours. And not the like, oh, their early stuff was better. But like Kumail, I heard him on a podcast years ago, on a featured stand-ups podcast. and he did a 5-minute set and blew me away. So I started looking up everything I could find on him, and to see him grow in that time from, you know, this stand-up who was getting, he got a stand-up show on Comedy Central. He got on Franklin and Bash. Oh, he got on Silicon Valley. Like, now he's writing and starring in his own movie. And it's like, that's very cool. So I found it hard to not like this movie.
Be predisposed to like it.
Because I knew the story.
Right.
I've heard them tell this story so many times. It's almost like going and reading the book. Like, I knew what happened. Mm-hmm. But it was so engaging. The casting was phenomenal in this movie. How you mentioned, like, okay, Ray Romano, somebody that people know, so the audience is going to be drawn to him, but you don't think of him as like this. He's a really talented actor. Mm-hmm. He's just not always been able to show it. And then Holly Hunter's great. So you have these acting chops. You have Bo Burnham and Adi Bryant as like the friends. And then Kurt Braunohler, who stole every scene he's in. That dude is one of the funniest dudes alive. But it's relatable, not in the sense that everybody's fallen in love with somebody who went into a coma.
Sure.
But there's those awkward situations that we've all had. And maybe they're not in a hospital, but the whole 9/11 conversation, yeah. And we lost 19 of our best men, yeah. Is one of the funniest movie lines ever. Just how it was delivered and that whole setup for it, I thought was great. And even just the start, that whole scene, just Ray Romano like, oh, 9/11, let's talk about it.
I've always wanted to talk about it.
I'm
with.
Against it,
yeah.
like, and it's really, really good, and just the dynamic between Kumail and Ray Romano, and then Ray Romano and Holly Hunter. It is a romantic comedy, but I feel like the comedy is, it's drama comedy. I think, because yeah, there's that falling in love, there's that boy meets girl and boy falls in love with girl,
the boy loses girl to coma,
but then that's the core of the story. Isn't really the romance. It's the life, that's Kumail's life and disappointing his family and everything, which I thought that was done very well. And to see somebody like him come, his parents moved here, and to see him not shy away and put that part of his life so full display on screen, and I thought it was done really, really well. I really, really like this movie, and Showalter did great. This is one of those to where everything falls into play. Kumail's not, he's been in stuff. He's good. He's good right. In everything he's in. But he's not one you think of as a leading man. This role is made for him.
It's
because
him.
It's him. So you have that. So you have this lead who's born to play this role, literally, and he's really, really good. And you put this amazing cast that's both actors and comedians around him, and then you get this director who, Michael Showalter's not a flashy comedy director. He's just a really good, talented eye that knows how to pace and got it done. And then everything about this movie came together. It's not just on our best of list because we like Kumail. Mm-hmm. You look at most best of list, it's getting a lot of praise. And for this small movie, it's just one of those where everything clicked and it worked out so well. And we don't get movies like this all that often to where that's just like everything works. And it's a joy and it's a treat, and I can't wait to see what they do next, because it would be easy to say, like, oh, he's a one-trick pony. This is his life story. Kumail's going to star in a buddy cop movie with John Cena. We're going to see a lot more Kumail, and I hope that it's not just a lot more Kumail in movies. I want more Kumail writing movies
as
well.
Oh, sure. If The Big Sick was kind of like the movie, the little movie that could, my number six would be the movie that would, because there's absolutely no reason that this wouldn't either be good or make a ton of money. It's got the big D behind it, Disney. It's also got the big P in Pixar behind it. Directed by Lee Unkrich and Adrian Molina, it's Coco, starring Anthony Gonzalez, Gael Garcia Bernal, and Benjamin Bratt. The thing that immediately struck me about Coco is just how stunningly beautiful the movie was. And you could find yourself, and I did at times, not paying a damn bit of attention to what's going on in the plot, but just watching the world that was created, and I was just completely blown away. If the sound would have gone out in the theater, simply the shots of the city of the dead, especially the first time you see it going over the Flower Bridge, just that alone would be enough to crack my top 10. That being said, I do think that Disney and Pixar did a great job with a story about the afterlife, amongst other things. There's lots of stuff that I think Pixar would tackle with a hint of what I hope was not culturally offending to our Mexican listeners. I don't know. I am not of Hispanic descent. I don't know if that's cultural appropriation by Disney. It's not that I don't care, but the movie was beautiful, and I thought it was really well done. I suppose maybe being an adult watching it, I'm like, yeah, I can see how this is going to turn out. And it did turn out exactly the way I thought, but it was still a wonderful movie. I think it's going to be one of those that if you have a really nice TV at your house and your kids want to watch Coco ad nauseum, just throw on the earbuds, listen to a couple episodes of Movies On Up, and just appreciate the work that went into just creating this world. They did a behind-the-scenes featurette on that shot that I was talking about of the City of the Dead. They showed all the individual elements that the animators had to create, and it was just fascinating to watch. So much work went into that, and if that's all you're able to appreciate about the movie, like I said, that would still be enough to get in my top 10, but it was still a well-done movie that I'm glad I saw. Didn't quite move me to tears like it did some other folks. It moved me to put it in my top 10 of the year.
From my number 6, which was The Big Sick, to my number 5, which is The Big Pig, written and directed by Joon Ho-bong, it is Okja from this year, the highest ranked Netflix movie on either of our lists, I believe.
You're correct. Spoiler alert.
I love this movie. I don't know why I'm so drawn to it. It feels almost like there's two movies going on. You have young Siohan An as Miha, who carries the movie. She is the heart of this movie. And she gets wrapped up with Paul Dano and Stephen Yeun, Lily Collins. They're in their own movie. This is an activist movie, a heist movie almost. And then on the other side, you have Tilda Swinton and Jake Gyllenhaal, who were told, just go for it. Two actors that throw themselves into everything.
There's no such thing as too weird for this.
Yes. And they went for it. It's my favorite Gyllenhaal in a career that's had like amazing performances. This is my favorite Gyllenhaal because it's not what you expect. You hear Jake Gyllenhaal's in this movie. You could guess for 100 years how he's going to be in this movie. You're not going to come close. Tilda Swinton, maybe her brand of weird is closer to what you would expect, but it still works well. There's a lot of heart to it. There's action. It's fun. It's a fun, fun movie. I love Okja. Like I thought the pig was great. I thought the setup was awesome. There's so much I love about this movie, mostly Gyllenhaal in his shorts, but I still absolutely adore everything about this movie, and I love it so much.
This was one that just in hearing you talk throughout the course of the year, I knew was going to be on your list, so I specifically left it off. There was a couple that I did that to, knowing how much you liked them, and I did like Okja an awful lot. It's another one of those ones that, well, you know that like the girl is going to become attached to the pig, and you find out very early like what the whole point of these super pigs are. So you know it's going to take a turn to go down one particular death chute, but I still think that it's an interesting ride to get there. It certainly takes a lot darker turns in some aspects than you think that it's going to. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. Did I actually just see that? Holy shit. But it was a really interesting, very original movie, and I can certainly appreciate it for that. So now the movies that cracked my top 5, most of these you're going to be familiar with, because they were in my halftime report. My number 5 was obviously much higher than that the first time around. It was a good year for horror movies, and I say that with air quotes, because they're ones that I think this year they made you think more than usual. And my number 5 is Jordan Peele's Get Out, starring Daniel Kaluuya, Allison Williams, and Catherine Keener. If you didn't see it, Julia Dockerau's Raw, I thought was outstanding. It's
French.
It is French. It is subtitled, so you're going to have to read. At times, it's a bit of a slow burn, and it's not necessarily a horror movie. Cannibals falls into that milieu, I suppose. But I thought that movie was really well done. And another Netflix movie that I don't, well, obviously is not going to make the list because Okja was the highest, but I thought Gerald's Game was really neat.
Had his moments.
Yes.
That dude is a... Mike Flanagan is a great horror director that has yet to make a great horror movie. Hush is his best.
Hush is real good.
Hush is real good. But he did Oculus, which is competent for what it was. Gerald's Game, which he took some chances on, and they paid off. Like, I don't think anything he's done yet has been, like, this great genre-defining movie, but I feel like he's sitting on one. I really do. I feel like he's got, like, a genre classic in him somewhere.
Yeah, and he's adapting Stephen King there, so it's not even necessarily like it was his story, and I think where the movie sort of fell...
But he took a short story and made it a feature length.
Right. Spoiler alert, Carla Gugino handcuffed to a bed... with Bruce Greenwood, I'm fine. You've got me there. And while that stuff is going on, I thought it was kind of fantastic. It goes a little bit off the rails at the end. It's not really a straightforward horror movie there either. But as good as those were, and they were good in spots, I don't think I saw one that was as complete as Get Out. I think it really deserved better than the February Dumping Grounds release that it got. But I'm kind of glad in hindsight it got put there because there was nothing else to see. So I think a lot more people saw it than they would have if it would have been released maybe in October, November. And I'm now interested in the stories that Peel would like to tell. And as great as Kalula was, I find that it's more rare to get a breakout performance from a director than it is an actor. And we got both of those here, but... that's what I'm always going to remember Get Out for. As long as Jordan Peele doesn't just make 20 years of crap movies from here on out, this is going to be the one that introduced us
all
to him.
It's his origin story.
Yes,
it's the guy from the sketch show.
Right.
Made a genre, a classic horror sci-fi-ish movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like social commentary.
All the above. In a year, we had a ton of social commentary movies.
Yeah, yeah.
This was an interesting way to do it.
And to touch on horror, like you mentioned Gerald's Game. The Void came out this year.
Yeah.
Which I think that's your classic throwback. That's
80s.
If you've seen an 80s horror movie, it's referenced in The Void.
Pretty much. Yeah,
like,
that's true.
The Void, I thought, was... But that's such a genre movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's a straight up, like, that's a pure...
It's not for everyone.
...horror movie. Like, if you're not a horror fan... I don't think The Void gives
you
much.
If
you
don't know
what
a big box VHS is, just forget it.
If you're a horror fan, The Void has everything for you. But then something like Better Watch Out, I thought was a fun horror movie. It was a little different take. And even something like Belko Experiment, which horror-ish. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a horror premise, just a little ridiculous. But Get Out, I think, is better with more watches, as good as it was. Because I watched it when it came out. I liked it a lot. You know, it would make my top 15. It didn't make my 10, but then I watched it again just last week or so after not seeing it for 9 months. It's good.
There's some subtleties to it that you don't get the first time because you're trying to absorb the whole thing.
Lakeith Stanfield, not to bring him up again, he's so good in this bit part. But then Daryl, his friend's name Daryl, I forget.
His friend?
The TSA agent.
Yeah.
I thought he was great. The lead, he's so good. Because he doesn't have a ton to work. He's not doing a ton. He's reacting to all this. And as we are, it's seeing is how weird stuff. But just that one shot of his face with the one tear. Like,
this shot everybody has seen, whether you've seen the movie or not.
It's the still that you see. Like, right. That is so... powerful and so good. And even Allison Williams is good. And
Caleb Whitford. Landry Jones, Bradley Whitford.
And Catherine Keener. Like, so good. And just the auction scene, and it's a ride. And when it goes off the rails, it goes off the rails. Like, I think it's somewhat predictable that you get a sense what's going on, but exactly what's going on kind of just throws a curveball. It's a good movie. My number four... another good movie that pretty sure was on my halftime. I think three of my top four were on the halftime list. But number four, directed by Patty Jenkins, starring Gal Gadot, Chris Pine. It's Wonder Woman. Hell of a year for superhero movies. This is probably my second favorite of the year. I mean, there was so many good ones this year. And we're going to talk about more. But if I had to rank, like... we could do a top five superhero movies of this year, I would have an also-ran, and I would love it. Like, this was a good year.
Yes,
and
it was.
I mean, we did an episode on Wonder Woman back in the summer, so I don't want to harp on it too much, but we talk about the breakout, like Jordan Peele and Daniel Kaluuya. Gal Gadot became a movie star, and you watch it in this movie.
It was teased in BVS, but this was just...
And just the whole scene in No Man's Land where she's just... That's probably my favorite 10 minutes of cinema this year. Her just walking across that barren land and the whole fight that follows. Of everything that happened in movies this year, that's probably my favorite 10 minutes or so put to film this year. And I get goosebumps thinking about it. I love that. I love the whole movie. I thought Chris Pine was great. I thought she was phenomenal, and Patty Jenkins, it was awesome to see a different feel of a superhero movie, especially coming from the DC side. I really loved it.
I liked Wonder Woman. The thing that I find frustrating beyond end, it's not even necessarily about Wonder Woman. It's just like, all right, well, DC makes Suicide Squad, and they make Wonder Woman. How can they not figure, like, did they accidentally make Wonder Woman? Like, I don't know how within a studio you can have something be so good like that, and then everything else they've done, which has been hot garbage. I would have preferred that they were all great.
Which DC movie has Zack Snyder not really had his hands in?
Yeah, I know.
Two of them, Wonder Woman and Suicide Squad. Which one did Geoff Johns kind of have more control over? Wonder Woman. I think hope is lost with this DC universe. I think you need to just scrap everything, keep making Wonder Woman movies.
Yeah.
And if they meet up later, fine. I mean, Aquaman's coming out, whatever. I don't see it being good or liked. But keep making these Wonder Woman movies. Get a new Superman. Get Matthew Vaughn in to do a new Superman. Let Matt Reeves make his dark Batman trilogy. Let Matthew Vaughn make a hopeful Superman trilogy. Keep making Wonder Woman. And if they come together, they come together. If not, we at least have great Wonder Woman movies, great Batman movies, and great Superman movies, which right now we're not getting any of that, except for Wonder Woman movies.
Yeah, that would be a win. It's almost like they should just completely split up the Justice League, which is my number four, not the Justice League, but split. From M. Night Shyamalan, starring Professor X, James McAvoy, and Anya Taylor-Joy. Shyamalan's not going to win any awards for this, and McAvoy won't either, which is probably the bigger disappointment between the two. But Shyamalan nearly won an award for Us, named after his stellar lead. This, to me, as much as I love the movie, and I do, even connections to other Shyamalan movies notwithstanding, on its own, I thought this was a fantastic movie that could have been 90 minutes of a gimmick, but not only did McAvoy do a great job of not making it a gimmick, you had a really great Survivor Girl in Anya Taylor-Joy, and if she wanted to just do those kind of movies for the rest of her career,
I'm into it.
Absolutely. Please do, because she's great. I think she's having sort of the career that we thought Makeham and Rowe was going to have, and she still might, but Taylor-Joy is phenomenal. But to me, this was a welcome return for Shyamalan. We have shit on him a lot. And
deservedly
so. Yes, it's not our fault. He's made shit movies. But when somebody does that and then makes a good one, will be the I'd rather have M. Night Shyamalan making good movies. You think I want to go to a theater and sit through The Happening? I fucking don't. But I was really happy, as I guess guarded as I was about seeing this movie, as skeptical as I was. Yes, for at least for 2017, he was back. It was really good to see him kind of get his mojo back, and hopefully he can recapture some of what made him a really inventive filmmaker seemingly 20 years ago.
He fell into that trap that we mentioned earlier. I don't know if it was this episode or not, where they became Shyamalan movies.
Yes.
And not just movies by M. Night Shyamalan. They became Shyamalan movies. And I feel like he had to live up to that. and he didn't have it in him. The Airbender movie, he tried something different. And I think even After Earth, I think was him trying to distance from a Shyamalan movie.
But they weren't good movies.
They weren't good movies, and they're out of his wheelhouse. What Split does is finds that nice balance of, hey, here's what you're good at, and here's what people love about Shyamalan movies. So he found that balance of The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable and the stuff people liked about The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable. And you pair that together with McAvoy, who really, really good. And you make it to where it's not just a gimmick. It's not just him putting on a dress. And there was a lot more layers to it than you would imagine. And then the great performance from Taylor Joy. It all adds up. And then you tack on the kicker with the last 30 seconds of the movie that I fist pumped and I stood up and I screamed yes, because that's what I want. That is Shyamalan. And I enjoyed it. I really did. It would have been top 20 for me. I didn't put it top 10, but I really liked it. And for the first time, I wanted to see this when I first heard about it, because McAvoy playing multiple personalities, yeah, I'm into that. But there was that hesitancy, so I couldn't say I was excited about a Shyamalan movie. I am damn excited for Glass. I want that movie. So for the first time in a long-ass time since pre-Signs, I am stoked for this Shyamalan movie. My number three, I feel like I might step on your toes here, because you might have it a little higher.
It's possible.
But mine is from this year, written and directed by James Mangold, starring Hugh Jackman, X-23, Patrick Stewart, Boyd Holbrook, Stephen Merchant. It's Logan. This is on a lot of year-end lists, especially for dudes who are drawn towards comics or any genre movies, really. And that's because it's a really good movie. It's not your X-Men movies. It's not even your Captain America movies that are kind of transcending genre. It's a Western. It's kind of a, not really, not quite post-apocalyptic Western, but it's a doomy, gloomy Western movie. It's a swan song. It's a farewell to some of your favorite characters that you've known for 20-some years. And it's done well. It's a shame it took 20 years to get a really good Wolverine movie and to get the Wolverine that I want on screen. Maybe that'll change now with Fox selling to Disney. Like, maybe we will get the Wolverine I want on screen again. Because we're not going to get it again from Jackman. You're not going to top this. It was a really good send-off for him. He was a good Wolverine. I don't want to shit on that. But we haven't had a great Wolverine movie until this. Really, really good. Did a great job. That's the one thing, the Disney-Fox merger thing, is I feel like it's going to deprive us of a Daphne Keene-led X-23 movie. Which is a shame, because I thought she was great. I want to see more of that character. I want to see more of this world. I want the X-23, not in your New Mutants or with X-Force or anything. I want a sequel to Logan starring X-23, which I don't think we'll get, but I want to see more of this world. I like where it left off. It's full of surprises. Essentially, the main villain, I think, is a surprise. I did not expect that. And it's pulled off well. Boyd Holbrook is competent, is the main-ish secondary villain, I guess. There's a lot to like about the movie. It was really, really well done. In a year of great comic book movies, it was the greatest.
I agree. That's why it's higher on my list, and I flatly refuse to move it, so more on Logan later. My number three, though, is a comic book movie, and it is a comic book movie in the comic bookiest, moviest sense of the word. It's John Watts' Spider-Man Homecoming, starring Tom Holland, Michael Keaton, Robert Downey Jr. In full disclosure, I have liked all of our recent Spider-Mans, but as much as I liked Tobey Maguire and even Andrew Garfield, I think Holland manages to capture the humor, the attitude, and the general spunkiness of... He wasn't just a good Spider-Man, he was a good Peter Parker. So he got that whole wall crawler package perfect. One thing that I think Marvel movies, as good as they have been, have lacked is a great villain. And I don't think that was the case with Michael Keaton's Tombs. Not only did he have a wonderful on-screen presence, he was also a fully realized character. We understand why he's a villain, and because we understand it, you kind of root for him. And that scene of him in the car with Peter on the way to homecoming is some fantastic filmmaking. Once you realize that these two characters outside of the suits are probably going to meet, you're kind of on edge. Your spidey sense is tingling, so to speak. And from the second he shows up to pick up his date for homecoming, it's just such a fun ride because we know something and we're just waiting for these characters to realize that they know it too. And when they do, it's a lot of fun. That movie was, it wasn't my favorite comic book movie of the year, but it was probably the most fun I think I had.
I loved this movie. I haven't liked Spider-Man since Spider-Man 2, which I thought was really, really good. I like those first two Spider-Man movies. I don't like the Garfield ones at all. What this movie did was focus on building up Spider-Man. Whereas even Spider-Man 1, the first Raimi one, and especially The Amazing Spider-Man, tried to build this Spider-Man mythology, this world. They tried to throw the whole world at you. People know who MJ is. People know the Harry Osborn thing. They know the origin. This bypasses all of that. He is Spider-Man already.
Because we've already seen him.
You've already seen him as Spider-Man. They don't try to throw in MJ or Gwen Stacy or Harry Osborn
his
or
uncle.
Any of this. Yeah, they don't throw in any of this other stuff. They focus on, here's a 15, 16-year-old kid that has these powers that wants to do good, but maybe isn't born to do this. And you see him grow that way. So they're not growing the universe yet. They're growing him, and then they'll build the universe around him, which I think is brilliant because it's not a Spider-Man movie we've seen before. You could have Mary Jane, like the love interest, Liz, who, like, it doesn't matter. Keaton, fantastic. Keaton was great. Probably the best villain that we've had in a Marvel movie so far.
Most complete, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because he's like Louise and Paul Rudd and T.I. and Ant-Man. They're surviving. You know, they're not necessarily a bad dude. He's just surviving. Yeah, maybe.
He does some bad dude stuff.
But you see where he's coming from. I really, really liked this. It was just outside of my top 10. It'd have been in, you know, 11 or 12. My number two, though, from comic book movie to a book movie, it is Andy Muschietti's adaptation of Stephen King's It. I thought this movie was so well done in every way imaginable. The casting of the kids, Finn Wolfhard, Sophia Lillis, Jaden Lieber, all the kids were really, really good. I think Wolfhard and Lillis were the highlights in this group of just... Usually in a movie that's centered on like six or seven kids, there's going to be that weak spot. I don't think this had it. Like, I can't point to any of the main Losers Club and say, oh, they were the weak spot. They were all really, really good. I thought Skarsgård was a really good Pennywise. He brought a little different. Like, Tim Curry owned that role,
right.
And it was iconic as that role.
For people our age, yeah.
So it would be easy to try to do that, to mimic Tim Curry. He didn't. He made his own Pennywise, and he did really, really good with it. The pacing of it was great. It was a great horror movie, a great coming-of-age movie. It had legit scares in there at times, and not just jump scares. It was jump scares, and then the extended them so that there was legit fright in there. And it just did a really, really good job of everything. Sophia Lillis, I thought, was so good in this movie and how they handled the Beverly character all around without sexualizing this little girl, but making a character that everybody else does. I thought they walked a really fine line there without getting creepy. And I thought, it was, as much as I want the dude from True Detective with Will Poulter, as much as I wanted that It movie, I can't complain.
The one
about
you got,
this movie.
Yeah.
I cannot complain. If I'd have got that movie, it means I don't get this one. And I'm excited for chapter two. Especially if Jessica Chastain signs on. I really, really liked this movie a ton.
Which brings me to my number two. And like, you may have stepped on my toes earlier. I feel like there's a possibility that I may be stepping on your toes with the last movie that you don't know what it is. Because spoiler alert, you know my number one. But I have a feeling that any given year where there may be an Edgar Wright movie, that's probably going to rate pretty high on Dave's list. And there's a better than average chance it's going to rate really high on my list as well. And it did. Of all the movies I saw this year, there was only one that I liked better than Edgar Wright's Baby Driver, starring Ansel Elgort, John Hamm, and Lily James. Let's not kid ourselves here. It doesn't matter who was in the movie. The guys were great. But the star of this movie is Edgar Wright. Hamm in particular is wonderful in his role. But Edgar Wright directed a 2-hour music video that manages to tell a story better than not only any music video I've ever seen, but almost any movie I saw this year, music notwithstanding. The movie bounces to the beats of his soundtrack, and while the actors don't necessarily dance, their movements, even down to the firing of their guns, are perfectly synced with the accompanying song. And I would argue that this is a musical right up there with Chicago or whatever else you want to throw out. It's not going to win anything because the actors don't actually sing, and that's the only way a musical would win anything. But it is phenomenal directing from a phenomenal director. It's a movie that anybody else, I don't think they can make this movie. You've got to be a director that captures movements, and few do better, if any. If you do better than Wright.
Yeah, if you're doing a movie that's basically 2 hours of choreography, you want somebody that knows how to move a camera. And I'm jumping. This is my number one.
Yeah.
So I'm not just going to piggyback on what you're saying. I need to move it along.
It is your turn.
It was my number one. Edgar Wright is, you know, him and Matthew Vaughn are probably my number one and two directors out there right now. And they both made my top 10.
Right.
But Edgar Wright is in such a class of his own. And the choreography here, the little stuff, and I mean, it goes back to Edgar Wright, the writer, too. Like, not only is he just this masterful director that knows how to use a camera, and this is all choreographed, and the gunshots are on sign, and the whole soundtrack is, it's not a soundtrack to the movie, it is the movie.
Right.
It's, the movie is embedded in the soundtrack, but even the dialogue, flipping through the channels, mm-hmm. and every line that's on the TV that's going, that he passes through, gets said later. The Monsters, Inc. speech to Doc is so good. Jamie Foxx is really, really good. Because, you know what? Jamie Foxx is charismatic as hell. And Jamie Foxx is so likable. But not here. Like, for Jamie Foxx to not be likable is one of his greatest achievements as an actor. And he's hateable in this movie. John Hamm is really, really good. The Elgort and Lily James romance, you know,
yeah,
it's rushed.
Cute.
It's rushed, but that's what it is. That's the feel of these classic 50s and 60s characters. You meet somebody with a cool car, you drive away with mm-hmm. each other, and that's it. And that's the equivalent of this. And, you know, with C.J. Jones, the deaf guy, I thought that character and Baby's relationship was really, really good, and it added something and added this depth that wasn't needed in this movie. But having it adds so much more to Baby and to the overall story and to the motivation, and it's just a really, 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 really fascinating, lovable movie. And maybe I'm biased. Maybe I love Edgar Wright too much as a director and as a writer, but like, it's such a beautifully written movie. And an even more beautifully directed movie and a greatly acted movie. I love John Hamm. I love everything in this movie. It's one of those that was made for me. Like,
yeah.
And the thing is it's when music videos were a thing. Like, I always thought it was fascinating when you could make a music video to a song that I don't really like, to the point where if the video's on, I'm going to watch the video even if I don't care about the song. Me and Edgar Wright have different tastes in music. I'm not into most of the songs in this movie, but I'm so into it, and they work. And I don't want Edgar Wright to fall into the sequel thing. I don't think this needs a sequel.
Right.
But if he makes one, I'm going to be there.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
My number one and my number two, I feel like, are, of anything, the movies that I could watch until literally my eyes puke, because I think they're that good.
See, Logan, I don't think has as much watchability.
Oh, spoiler alert, that's my number one.
I think Logan was so great, but I don't think it's as great of a rewatch because I did try to rewatch it recently, and it's good still. But I think what made it so like mind-blowing and great was the surprises and stuff that you lose a little bit on
the
rewatch.
Right, you lose some of the impact because when you know what's going to happen. But yeah, that's the part of it for me about Logan specifically is...
What number was Logan on your list?
One, actually. Just watching Hugh Jackman. Like you said, it took 20 years for us to write a movie that was worthy of what Jackman can do as an actor in the role of Wolverine. And it blows that this is his last one, but at least he got it. At least he got to take his shot on this one. I don't have a great memory for the list that we've ever done, but I don't believe on my list there's ever been a movie that has gone wire to wire for me. There's generally always something that I'll see at the beginning of the year and be like, oh, that was fantastic. But, you know, in November, December, I see something and like, oh, yeah, that was better. No, Logan... It was, did that come out in March?
February or March. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say it's March. I mean, that's not, I write down every movie I've seen in a list, and I generally try and rank them as I'm writing them down, as I see them. And from the moment I put Logan on that document, the question on every movie that I would see from then on out, did I like it more than Logan? The answer was always no. It doesn't mean they're bad movies, it just means that's how wonderfully made, wonderfully acted, wonderfully written. That is the perfect encapsulation of that character. The perfect way to send that character off. We got it. It shocked me that we did, but we got it. Wolverine was always my favorite comic book character. And I'm glad that, you know, we have great Wonder Woman movies now. We've got great Captain America movies. It seems that every superhero has sort of had their time to shine, but I don't feel like Wolverine ever got it until this year. And I couldn't have asked for anything better with that movie. It's my favorite X-Men movie. It's my favorite comic book movie. And it is my favorite movie from this year by a long shot.
There was one omission that if you listen to us, you're probably wondering why we didn't mention a certain movie. We're going to do a whole episode on it next week, and Ryan and I have managed to go a month without letting each other know our opinions on it, so we kind of left it off the list because I don't know if we agree or disagree on it, because it would have been on mine, spoiler alert, would have been really high. Anything omitted off your list that you really wanted to squeeze into that top 10?
No, not really. I mean, I guess if I wanted to squeeze one in just to be a movie hipster... I really liked The Wall, but that made my halftime list, so I didn't feel the need to talk about it again. The other movies, obviously, I left off Okja, and Guardians and Thor were right there because it was a great year for
Guardians,
superhero
movies. Thor, yeah. Lego Batman were all in my top 20 that didn't make it. I really like Power Rangers. I'm the only one, but I do. I liked It Comes at Night, the A24 Joel Edgerton movie. I really liked that for some reason. And then Patty Cakes and Sweet Virginia were two smaller movies that made my top 20 that I really, really liked. And then a couple Netflix, Message from the King and What Happened to Monday and I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. I thought we're all really, really... We probably could have done a top 10 Netflix movies this year, which would have been cool. But that's it for me, I think. I'm good. I'm done with 2017. I'm ready to move on.
Ready or not.
We're here now.
Yeah.
Anything jump out at you for 2018 that you're really... I think it's one of those, there's a lot of good stuff coming out. That,
sure, I mean...
I mean, like, obviously Avengers.
Right, not to be a genre kid, but yeah, Avengers, Ready Player
Black
One.
Black Panther,
both look
Ready
cool.
Player One.
Yeah, into those.
I think it's going to be a good year again. Like, I think there's a lot of... I think we're seeing a shift in quality of stuff that you're getting. I feel like the stuff that used to be really hard to find is getting easier and easier to see. Which is good,
yeah.
Because it's not just for us, but it's putting money, it's letting those movies make more money. So I'm excited to see where we're at in 2018, what our lists look like, because I don't think there's anything coming out. I mean, other than Avengers Infinity War, like I can't think of like, oh, well, these are going to be in my top 4 or 5, probably for sure. Don't really have many of those, so I'm excited to see where 2018 goes.
And we will kind of... take it week by week at a time together, and in just a short 6 months, we'll be doing our halftime report, and running down our top five of the first 6 months. I'm certain that Black Panther will probably be on at least one of our lists. But let's see. Next week, Dave's mentioned, we're going to do a Last Jedi episode. So if you haven't had a chance to see that yet, you've got another week to see it. If you haven't seen it, stay the hell away from that episode.
There's going to be spoilers.
Yeah, we're going to blow up spoilers in that movie, like the Resistance blew up Starkiller Base in the last movie. And if you haven't seen that one,
I apologize
for that as well. But until next week, when we head to the galaxy far, far away,
keep it up.